Good morning. 9.5 minutes past 6 o'clock. John Munson sitting in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network. Well, a recent study suggests that if you put veggies in a McDonald's wrapper, kids will say they taste better. Whether it's French fries or carrots, preschoolers say food tastes better when it becomes wrapped up in a McDonald's wrapper and you see the brand name. Marketing strongly affects four-year-olds' food preferences, according to a Stanford University study. Listen to this. 70% of the kids in the study said the same French fries from McDonald's were better in a McDonald's bag than in a plain bag. 13% liked the ones in the plain bag, and 10% could tell they were the same. 61% of the kids said milk tasted better in the McDonald's cup. 18% could tell it was the same. 59% of the kids said chicken nuggets tasted better in a McDonald's bag. 23% said they could tell that they were the same. 54% of the kids said carrots tasted better in a McDonald's bag. 23% could tell they were the same. 48% of the kids liked the hamburgers better in the McDonald's wrapper. 15% could tell they were the same. Kids who preferred McFood tended to live in homes with a greater number of television sets and tended to eat at more McDonald's than kids not influenced by the McDonald's brand name. So what does it all mean? Corporations are spending lots of money to directly market to children, and there are some people who are not too happy about that. We'll discuss that topic this morning, and our guest joining us by telephone is Josh Golan, Program Director for the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood. Good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So this Stanford University study didn't come as a huge surprise to you.
No. We know that marketing plays an incredibly powerful role in young children's lives, food marketing in particular. And we know that, the companies are spending billions of dollars to promote their brands to children, and they're doing that for a reason. So we weren't surprised by the data, but we're certainly happy to have it because we think it makes a powerful case for what's wrong with food marketing to children.
Well, what is the end result of food marketing to children that would be bad?
Well, we have an epidemic of childhood obesity in this country right now. Obesity rates have tripled for older children and more than doubled for younger children in the past 25 years, and that rise in childhood obesity corresponds to an incredible increase in food marketing to children, and childhood obesity is a major public health crisis. We're seeing adult-onset diabetes, type 2 diabetes, in young children now for the first time. We don't have any idea what the long-term health repercussions of that are going to be, either on those individual children or on our healthcare system. This is a major public health crisis.
We'd like listeners to join in on our discussion this morning. What do you think about small children and advertising? What should a parent do to counteract all these messages? What's the responsibility of the marketers? And what does this all mean for children's health? Here are the numbers to call. 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number anywhere you can hear this broadcast. If you're in Madison, please call us at 263-1890, 263-1890. If you'd prefer, you can send us an email. The address is talk@wpr.org. Well, I guess one of the obvious questions this morning would be, these kids aren't walking to McDonald's or wherever on their own, and they're not doing the grocery shopping. Presumably, mom and dad are doing the grocery shopping and deciding what the menu is for dinner. What makes this advertising marketed or directed at children so effective?
Well, what makes it so effective is that young children are particularly susceptible to advertising. Until children reach the age of 8, they don't even understand advertising persuasive intent. So when they see Ronald McDonald, they don't understand that Ronald McDonald's job is to sell them a hamburger. They think he's talking to them, and the messages that he's giving them are the same as their friends or their parents or their teachers. So that makes it particularly powerful. Now, in terms of parents, of course, it's ultimately up to the parents, particularly at that age. But what you have is these corporations, McDonald's, the cereal companies, trying to make parents' jobs harder by appealing directly to the kids, who then turn into little lobbyists for the food that they want, which frequently is not the food that's good for them. And you know, parents are overworked; they're tired; they have a lot going on. We don't think that corporations should be allowed to come in and try and make parents' job harder, which is certainly what they're doing.
Well, parents also have the choice to not have the television on.
Parents do have that choice to not have the television on. But unfortunately, what you're seeing now is there's so much marketing aimed at children. It's not just on TV. Ronald McDonald's is actually going into schools now. You have it in the schools. You have it in the Internet. You have it just about anywhere that children are, there's marketing. So even if a parent is able to really limit their children's exposure to media, it's getting to all the other children. And we do know that children talk about these things, and that's part of the marketing strategy, is to get the products out there into the schoolyard, get it into the preschool, and get the kids really excited about McDonald's or the latest movie or this. And so really the only way at this point is to move your child into the woods and cut them off from everything entirely. That's the only way, really, to shield them from all these messages at this point, because it's really that pervasive.
This isn't a new thing. I mean, there's been advertising aimed at children as long as there's been children's programming on television, and presumably before that on the radio. What's different about it now?
Well, the first thing that's different is the scope. In 1983, marketers spent $100 million a year marketing to children. In 2007, that number has jumped to almost $17 billion a year that they're spending. So, I mean, that's an incredible increase over a span of just 25 years. With that has come a number of changes in the way that they market. While they used to just primarily market on Saturday morning cartoon shows, you now have 24-hour networks targeting children television shows. You have internet marketing. You have marketing on cell phones. You have marketing in schools. So there's been a tremendous increase. You have viral marketing, where kids are encouraged to market to their friends. Just about any means that marketers can get to children, they now do that, and the sheer scope of it is a tremendous change.
We're at weather time. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll take some callers who want to get in on our subject here. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 18 and a half minutes past 6 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson sitting in for Joy Cardine this week. Well, when it comes to books that change the world, Plato's Republic ranks near the top, and it's more than just ancient ideas of virtue morality. Simon Blackburn argues that even today's neoconservative movement has roots in Plato, though he says it stems from a misreading of the text. After 2 o'clock on Talk of the Nation today, Neil Conan and philosopher Simon Blackburn discuss the biography of Plato's Republic. That's after 2 o'clock today here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about marketing directed at children. And our guest by telephone is Josh Golan, Program Director for the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood. We have a couple of lines still open for you if you'd like to get in on this conversation. Here are the numbers, 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number, 800-642-1234. In Madison, it would help us out if you would use our local number, 263-1890, 263-1890. If you'd like to send us an email, the address is talk@wpr.org. Let's go to the phones and take a caller for our guest, and we'll go first to Stephanie in Chautauqua. Good morning, Stephanie. Thanks for calling in this morning.
I agree. I was listening to your program, and I agree with as far as the marketing goes for kids. I have a six-year-old myself who, unfortunately, likes to go out and eat a lot. A lot of the parents' responsibility, I think, turns around on that for saying no. It's more cost efficient to pack up something for them to eat versus going to McDonald's. I couldn't tell you how many times I've gone to a doctor's office, and there's a child there that is a little overweight, and the parents can't figure out why. A lot of it has, as far as the advertising towards kids, it takes all of 2 seconds to tell them no and explain to them why, and explain to them why it's for their own good. Other than that, I guess I don't know how else to expand on that, that it's more the parents' issue than it is the children. I mean, the adults have to be the responsible ones here, not the children. And when you have kids, you watch out for their better interests. So where do you draw the line as far as who is taking responsibility for what?
Well, I think certainly parents are the ones who are ultimately responsible. But it sounds like you do a wonderful job of counteracting these marketing messages that are directed at your child. But the parents that we hear from, a lot of them are doing the same thing. But at the same time, they don't understand why corporations are allowed to give messages to their children that run counter to the lessons that they're trying to teach. We have an assumption that people who talk to our children are saying things that are in their best interest. Well, these companies are not saying things that are in the children's best interest. They're deliberately trying to undermine any health messages they may be getting from their parents, any messages they may be getting in their school. And so my question is, why do we allow that to happen? Why do we put corporate profits ahead of the well-being of children? And yes, parents can say no, but why do we allow corporations to make that job so much harder?
Let's go next to Debbie in Beloit. Debbie, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I think a lot of this is a lot of the childhood obesity is from people having children younger nowadays, and they are getting married, having children, and they don't even know how to cook yet. We have potlucks at work, and I can tell you the younger women that work there with kids, they bring in chips and stuff because they have, I think that they live off fast food, pizzas, or, an instant dinner of some kind. And I got a niece who's 5 years old, and she's over 100 pounds. So I think a lot of it's coming from just the younger mothers that have no clue how to do the well-balanced meals.
Well, there's no doubt that there are a number of factors in the childhood obesity epidemic, and certainly changing demographics, both parents in the workplace, where parents have less time. These are all things that are major contributors to it. But we also know that food marketing, there have been a number of studies that have demonstrated the link between what is marketed to kids and what they what are their food preferences, what are the things they're requesting, what are the things that they're eating. And so there's really no doubt at this point that food marketing is playing a major role in the childhood obesity epidemic and confounding all some of the factors that the caller just mentioned.
Well, there seems to be a much faster pace to life. Everyone is a lot busier. A lot of people are working multiple jobs and taking care of the children. It's probably it's a lot easier to stop at McDonald's, even though it would cost you more than if you bought steak and fixed it at home. And let's just not pick at McDonald's. I mean, that's, let's say, Burger King or Hardee's or Arby's or name any fast food restaurant you want. It's much easier to go there than it is to go home when you're already tired and prepare a meal, particularly since children are involved in so many activities as well. So now you've got the kids are they have to get to gymnastics or dance class or hockey or baseball or basketball or volleyball or whatever it is. And you've got a few minutes to get them some food and get them to their next thing. Isn't part of this just about the pace of our life and doing what's easy instead of perhaps what's best?
I certainly think that that's a part of it. I certainly think that's a part of it. I also think that, probably one of the things that's going on is because of parents being busier and getting less time to spend with their children, they want to make the time. A lot of parents want to make the time that they spend with the children as fun as possible. And one of the things, one of the keys to food marketing is that they've turned eating and is now supposed to be a really fun experience. I mean, there's nothing funner than going to McDonald's, right? And so, when I was a kid, eating was just eating. It wasn't necessarily supposed to be this huge entertainment part of my day, but now that's one of the ideas that's being marketed, is that eating is an experience, it's fun. And so for parents who are overworked, may not get to spend a lot of time with their children, I'm sure that part of what goes into this is that the idea, I can give my child something that they want, I can have this fun experience with them in this limited time that we get to spend together.
Let's take another phone call. We'll go to Zach in Green Bay. Zach, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I wanted to address the apparently prevalent idea that this is just a matter of parental responsibility and adult responsibility. The fact of the matter is that far over 70% of American children come from homes that are single parents or both parents working. Number two, we're not just talking about McDonald's here. We are talking about virtually every aisle in the grocery store that contains food that is salty, fat, sugary, and basically edible garbage. And I think we have every legal right as a society to limit corporations' ability or freedom to market this edible garbage to our children. And I'm really quite sick of the attitude that it's all the individual's fault, where the multi-billion-dollar corporations have no blame whatsoever or no responsibility whatsoever.
Thanks for the call, Zach. Response?
I couldn't have said it better. I mean, I agree 100% with Zach, and I think it's interesting, actually, that, this is one area where we say, you know, it's entirely up to you, parents, to fend this stuff off, and it's society has no responsibility to help you. I mean, we don't say that about anything else. If there are threats to children, and this is what this is, this food being marketed to children is a threat. If there are other threats to children, we don't say, parents, it's entirely up to you to stop this threat. We have, we have laws, we have regulations that protect children, and this is clearly a case where that's needed.
How would that be accomplished?
How would that be accomplished? Well, first of all, there should be no marketing to children under 8. As I mentioned earlier, they don't understand it. It's just not fair. So the first thing that should happen is there should be no advertising. The broadcasters get the airwaves for free. They have a public interest obligation. One of the things that they should be doing is they should be broadcasting commercial-free programming for young children. There should be no marketing in schools. There's just too much advertising aimed at children, and schools should be a place where the things that are being taught to children are in their best interest. There should not be anybody with an ulterior motive trying to sell a product to a child in school, so we should make schools commercial-free zones. The media characters, I mean, this is one of the things we haven't talked about yet, but characters like Shrek, like SpongeBob SquarePants, we did a study this spring with the new Shrek the Third movie coming out. There was 78 different food products tied to that movie. So this packaging with Shrek on it, I mean these were sugary cereals, these were cookies, this was McDonald's. You know, the food that we do not want children to be eating was all being tied with this major movie that every kid in America just about was talking about. So there should be regulations prohibiting the use of these media characters to sell food to young children. That's something that could be very easily done and would really make a lot of sense and a lot of difference in the health and well-being of children.
We'll pick this discussion up right after the news. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 6:35. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine. This hour, we're talking about advertising and marketing aimed at children and what it's doing. And we're focusing on, we started the hour focusing on McDonald's, but certainly it's not limited to that. Just before the break, we were discussing what might be done about it. Our guest on the phone this morning is Josh Golan, Program Director for the Campaign for Commercial-Free Childhood. We have a couple of open phone lines for you if you'd like to join our discussion. 800-642-1234 is a toll-free number. Good anywhere you can hear this broadcast. In Madison, we'd prefer if you would use 263-1890. We had a caller who's been waiting since before the news, so let's go right back to the phones and talk to Gonzo in Milwaukee. Good morning. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thanks. Hello?
Yep, you're on.
All right. I think that there is a combination of problems. To start with, the responsibility cannot lay solely on McDonald's. I agree that advertising heavily to children may be wrong. However, parents have absolute control over their kids until they go to school. They can turn off the TV. They can teach them good eating habits. And besides, there's nothing wrong with a McDonald's burger. The problem is that if you go and eat five of them a day, then you become obese. I think moderation is a problem, or lack of moderation, I'd say.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's give our guest a chance to respond.
Certainly, there's a number of factors that are leading to childhood obesity. But I guess the thing that I keep coming back to is, as a society, why have we chosen to allow these companies to make parents' job harder? Why, when parents are trying to teach messages about healthy eating, about moderation, and instill values in their children, why do we allow corporations to make their job harder? I mean, if anybody, and this is a different topic, but if you've seen the Michael Moore movie Sicko, and whatever you think of that movie, one of the shocking things in that movie is the different approach to in France to parenting. The idea that it's society's job to help parents be better parents, that we all benefit if we raise healthier children. And what we have here in the United States is a situation where we just say, parents, you're completely on your own, and these companies are telling your children to eat unhealthy food, and if they do eat it, it's your fault. Well, certainly there's things that you can do, but why, as a society, don't we decide that we want to make it easier to raise healthy children?
Before the news, we were talking about what you would like to see happen and what can be done about this in terms of controlling advertising and marketing directed at children. How do you see that happening, given the fact that the courts have basically said that corporations have the same free speech rights as individuals?
Well, it's I think that's an unfortunate decision that they've made. But as I mentioned, there are things that can be done. When we can start with television, as I said, the networks have a tremendous gift. They've got the airwaves belong to the public, and we give these licenses to television stations in return for them meeting a public interest obligation. Part of that public interest obligation should be to provide commercial-free programming for children. And included in that commercial-free programming should mean that not just advertisements on the programming, but there should be no licensing of the characters. So what you've seen now on PBS, even those characters being licensed to food products, to clothing, to toys, and that shouldn't be, because what that happens is that turns the show into advertising. So that's a major thing that we could do that would not restrict anybody's free speech. It would just be about creating a commercial-free space for children. Another way that we could create commercial-free space for children is to ban corporate marketing in schools. That is not, from everybody I talk to, that schools have the absolute right to not allow advertising in their schools. That does not infringe on anybody's free speech, even corporations, and that's something that we could do.
Well, let's take these one at a time here. First of all, the licensing of products, that's been going on for a long time. I mean, Rocky and Bullwinkle had their own brand of bubble bath back in the 60s. You had Popeye Spinach. There have been, the Disney Corporation was probably the first to really get into marketing its characters. So this has been around for a long time. In reference to the licensing of products on public television like Big Bird and the Teletubbies and so forth, without the licensing revenue, most of those shows wouldn't be able to stay on the air.
Well, but that starts as a public policy decision. We've decided not to fund properly fund public television. And so the alternative is they go out and they see corporate sponsorship and they do licensing in order to produce the revenue. And actually, a lot of that revenue is then to bring those shows overseas. They don't actually need as much of that revenue to show those shows here in the United States. But even so, it's a public policy decision. We've decided that the way to pay for educational children for television, for children, which I think is an important thing. The way to pay for that is by selling things to children. We don't have to do it that way. We could provide the funding for public funding for education, and then there would be no need for that licensing. And in terms of, you know, there's always been licensing. Yes, there's always been licensing, but the scope has never been what it is today. I encourage, you know, people, you know, you may not think about this because a lot of it is at your child's height. They do this in the grocery store, you know, on the bottom shelves, which are at this child's height so they can see it. Go through the cereal aisle and look at all the media characters that are in the cereal aisle. Go through the fruit snacks aisle. Go through the cookie aisle. You will be amazed at, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of products with Shrek on them, with SpongeBob SquarePants, with Dora the Explorer, the characters that are really, you know, some of the most powerful influencers in children's lives these days are all over the grocery store.
Well, and it isn't just television. I mean, let's face it, we're talking motion pictures. Shrek is a motion picture. You had all sorts of Star Wars characters that were marketed on cereal boxes. There have been all sorts of merchandising things going back decades, lunch boxes and dolls and action figures. All of these things have been aimed at children. I guess I'm trying to see a way that you're going to be able to be successful in getting that kind of policy changed.
You can restrict. Here in Massachusetts, we were getting ready to sue Kellogg for doing some of these things, and what we ended up doing is we went into settlement negotiations, and we got them to agree to stop using the licensed characters on cereals that did not meet a certain nutrition standard. That's a big change. It's an admission by a food company that these are incredibly powerful techniques, and that for the worst products, they should not be used. Other companies hopefully are going to follow suit, either because they're afraid of litigation or they're afraid of legislation. But fortunately, there is a tremendous movement to improve the health of children and fight back against some of this marketing. And I believe that's going to lead to substantive changes. And in the case of Kellogg, it already did.
We're just about at weather time, and we've got full phone lines, and we're going to get to those callers right after we check weather around the state of Wisconsin. 800-642-1234. Keep that number handy so that you can call in as soon as a line opens up. We're talking about marketing aimed at children. What do you think about it? Maybe you've got some experiences. Maybe you found some things that work for you as a parent in terms of combating this. Maybe you've got some ideas about what sort of legislation might be passed or regulation of this, or maybe you don't think that that's the way to go. Let us know. This program is about what you think. I'm John Munson, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 6:46. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine. After 5, Ben Maron's guest is one of just a few Iraq War soldiers granted conscientious objector status. He shares his account of abuses of Iraqi civilians witnessed during his tour of duty in Iraq and at Abu Ghraib prison. That's after 5 today with Ben Maron's on At Issue here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about marketing to children and its effects with Josh Golan, Program Director for the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood. Let's go back to the phones, and we'll welcome a call from Katie in Manitowoc. Katie, thanks for holding.
Hi, thank you for having me on your show. I just wanted to say that I'm a single mother, and I work a full-time job. I have almost a three-year-old daughter, and I totally agree with a commercial-free zone for children, although I think it's really hard to fight that, except that I just fight it on our own level. So I make the choice not to take her down those aisles in the grocery store. And I take her to a farmer's market with me once a week, and she helps me buy our groceries. And during the winter months, we go to the deli section and the produce section of the grocery store, and we make it a lovely mother-daughter shopping experience, and she helps me cook. And I'm not a health freak. You know, she eats cookies, but she helps me make chocolate chip cookies or sugar cookies. And, I mean, it's a family experience for us, and she's never been to a McDonald's. And, I mean, we have a very busy life, but we're just choosing, you know, we're choosing the way we live. And she's never seen Shrek or Dora, but she knows who they are. And when she does see them on a box of cereal or something, we comment on how cute they are, and then I make the choice not to buy it for her. And I just think it is kind of up to the parent. And we live in a society where, you know, commercials are prevalent and where things are marketed towards kids under 8. But, I mean, I'm still the parent, and it's still my paycheck, and I'm still the one who will buy her groceries and fix her, you know, a hot bowl of oatmeal every morning as opposed to multicolored cereal. So.
Thanks for the call, Katie. Well, here's a person who is trying to exercise some control. There are probably a lot of parents like that. What happens with those kids when they get to school and they're with a bunch of other kids who are all maybe being raised differently?
Well, I think that's one of the problems. And it sounds like Katie is just doing an amazing job with her daughter and turning shopping and food preparation into a joint activity, which is wonderful. And you know, I think there's some really wonderful ideas for parents out there in what Katie is doing, but we don't raise our kids in a vacuum. And Katie is doing, it sounds like, everything wonderfully, but, you know, when kids get to school and other kids are raised differently, these characters, particularly the characters, are so powerful that that kids are going to be exposed. They're going to want these things, and there's going to be, you know, in a lot of households, there are battles over these foods, even though the kids themselves may not have seen the ads, just because the products, that's part of the marketing strategy, is to get kids talking about these products, these characters, to use the Dora the Explorer of a lunchbox, not just to get the kid who brings the lunchbox to school excited about Dora and all the products that she's selling, but to get the kid that's sitting next to her excited too. And so that's why, that's one of the reasons why I don't think we can just say this is a problem that can be dealt with on an individual basis, but we need to look at this as a society.
Let's go next to James in Green Bay. James, good morning. Thanks for holding.
Good morning. Hi.
Go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to kind of bring up a counterpoint or point out that there could be a little bit of conceit, and I don't mean that too rudely, but a little bit of conceit in thinking that one person or one group of people have the global values of what is healthy and unhealthy. For instance, you know, if there's advertisements for eggs or turkey or chicken for breakfast that might seem nice and healthy, a vegan parent might not see it the same way. And another idea would be just why stop at advertisements? If the advertisements and the viral marketing are unhealthy for kids, why couldn't the products themselves be deemed harmful, such as PlayStations and televisions and computers, things that kids sit around and don't exercise while they're doing, and why not make a push to make all of those illegal as well? And a little bit tongue-in-cheek there, obviously. So I'll take my comments or take my responses. Thank you.
Well, we're not trying to demonize products, actually. I don't think any food should be marketed to kids, whether it's carrots, whether it's chicken, whether it's McDonald's, whether it's cereal, whether it's spinach. I think I agree with the caller that parents have different ideas about the way what's healthy for their children, and I think what we really need to do is we should educate parents on the science so they know that, you know, drinking soda has been proven to have bad health effects for children, and then let parents make the decision if they're vegan, if they're if they believe in this, they as as long as we're getting information to them, then they should be able to make those decisions. But what we're doing is we're going around the parents. We're bringing the children into the decision-making process and turning them into, you know, deliberately trying to get them to nag for products instead of respecting the parents' authority. I actually agree with the caller. It's up to the parents. But if it's up to the parents, let's respect them as gatekeepers.
Let's go next to Mike in Madison. Mike, good morning. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Josh, earlier in the program you asked the question why we put corporate products before children. And I think the answer is clear. Americans proudly proclaim that we're a capitalist society. We put profits before almost everything. Old people, soldiers, wars, health care, the environment. I can't think of many things that come before profits. That's the answer.
Thanks for the call, Mike.
You're welcome.
I think your caller does get to the root of the problem. Though I do think that even in a capitalist society, that you can choose to prioritize children, that you can recognize that children need special protections, and we've even done that. We don't send children off to work in the mines anymore. And I don't think. I hope that your callers wouldn't say that we shouldn't have laws prohibiting child labor because it's all up to the parents. So we do recognize in some cases that children do need special protection. We don't allow tobacco advertising to children anymore, though the tobacco companies do everything they can to try and get around that. And that's been a good thing. Less children smoking means less people getting hooked on cigarettes, less people dying. So that's a good thing. And we do, even though we prioritize corporate profits over a lot of things, in some cases we do recognize that children need special protection, that the best thing for kids is not just to throw them into the marketplace at an early age. Here's another case where we should be doing that.
Let's take another quick call from Pat in Richland Center. Pat, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. I just wanted to comment on the smartness of the corporations. For example, they tag team together. Walmart has tag teamed with McDonald's. You go into a Walmart and many young consumers bring their young children. The first thing they're met with is a giant McDonald's figure that you can touch and feel and sit on. It's a little bench, and the bright lights of McDonald's, and people in this fast-paced society, they want to just please their children, make them quiet while they're shopping. And it's the ingenuity of the corporations, it's just difficult. It's just very difficult to make correct choices sometimes. And I'll take my comment off the air.
I think the caller gets at something that I should have raised earlier, and it is really important, is how well the corporations are doing their job in terms of doing this marketing. They are ingenious. They hire child psychologists that teach them what are the weak points in children. They do studies to find out how to get children to nag their parents more effectively. What are the things that they can put in their advertising that will be more successful when that child then goes to nag for the product? They do things like your caller mentioned with partnering McDonald's with Walmart, all sorts of partnerships, ways of getting their brands out everywhere into the lives of children, and really getting into the fabric of childhood, and they do this with as I said, $17 billion a year. They do it with the latest technologies. They do it with experts and child psychologists, and it is ingenious. And that's why it's so effective, and that's why we need solutions.
Isn't part of this sort of a culture-wide problem? I mean, instead of the kids running around outside and playing, they're sitting in front of the computer screen, they're sitting in front of their Xbox or whatever their video game console is, or they're in front of a computer. So they're just being placed in these situations instead of getting outside and running around where there wouldn't be much advertising.
That's absolutely true. And when they're sitting in front of a screen, it's a double whammy. As one of your callers mentioned earlier, they're not exercising because they're sitting in front of a screen, and they're getting, just from television alone, they're getting 30,000 advertisements a year on average children. So It's yes, part of it is a huge cultural shift. It's loss of outdoor spaces. It's parents thinking that neighborhoods aren't safe for children to go out and play by themselves. It's a lack of parks. It's a lack of after school programs. We are talking about a huge societal problem where we don't prioritize what's best for kids, and that's why we're in the situation that we're in.
We just have about 30 seconds left. What is the main effort that you're pushing for right now? Do you have some legislation you're proposing in Congress or what? And we have about 30 seconds.
Senator Tom Harkin has a bill that would restore the Federal Trade Commission's authority to regulate marketing to children. This would be a huge first step. The Federal Trade Commission used to have that authority in the early 80s. Corporations lobbied Congress, and they got that authority taken away. Since that time, that's when we've seen the explosion of food marketing to children, the explosion of all marketing to children, and the rise of childhood obesity. Getting that is the first step.
Josh, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
It's been my pleasure.
Josh Golan is Program Director for the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood. This morning's program was produced by Leo Duran with on-air production by Karen Prager and Cheryl Gasser. If you would like a copy of the program, you can call the radio store at 800-747-7444 and ask for program 88A, as in Apple. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.